Yes, I'm calling to let people know that I do provide hot meals and...
Yeah, I was calling some information on shelters.
I would like to let a man by the name of Jack Randall know that we found his dog.
I've got a mother that's in a rest home, and I need to get to her.
Yes, I had a truckload of cat food, and you know, where should I take this?
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Those were the voices of Joplin, Missouri residents who have been calling in to the local radio station, KRZG, during this week's tornado strikes. Many are turning to KZRG radio for the most recent news and information, and this is one way that Joplin is responding to the crisis. We've had our share of severe weather in recent weeks, but nothing compared to the complete destruction in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, other areas in the southeast of the United States, and also Joplin, Missouri. Still, when we watch those scenes on television or online, as many do, we have to wonder, what if we were hit? The more tornadoes that hit out there, the more we have to wonder about it. And coming up later, we'll hear from the director of Ohio's Emergency Management Agency and also an expert at engineering buildings to withstand high winds. We'll also hear from one of the radio jacks that was in Birmingham, Alabama, the day the tornadoes hit, and how he managed things there. Right now is Michael Pinnell. He is director of the Franklin County Emergency Management and Homeland Security. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Good morning, Ann. How are you doing?
Very well. Also with us is Tanya Kraft. She's director of emergency services for Red Cross of Greater Columbus. Welcome to the show, Tanya.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners out there, if you have any questions or comments about what would you do if there's disaster, now's your time. Now's your chance. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online to wosu.org/allsides and check out our Facebook post there. Tanya, when you watch the scenes and when you're paying attention to what's going on down in Alabama and in Missouri, what do you take out of it? What do you learn from these? Do you talk to people about what's going on down there so that you can learn from it?
Sure do. Absolutely. We're fortunate here in Columbus. We have a lot of caring people that have become Red Cross trained volunteers and have made themselves available and actually headed down to Alabama shortly after the tornadoes hit and have been assisting the families by serving food, working in shelters, providing emotional support for those that have been victims of the tornado down there. We've had over 30 volunteers from the Central Ohio area that have traveled down and have been supporting the members of the community down there. These are Red Cross volunteers from here in our community, and they made themselves available to go down for about 3 weeks.
So, Michael, what about you? What are your thoughts when you're reading about and hearing about the catastrophes in other communities, really just like ours?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Tanya and the Red Cross and Franklin County EMA and Homeland Security, we're joined at the hip. So we do all our exercises together. We train together. We talk together, because when you look at a map of Franklin County and you cut out a piece of paper that's a mile wide and you stretch it across the county and you look at what kind of devastation that would bring to Franklin County, you know, all the preparedness and all the training and all the exercises you can do still would not prepare you for something like that. It would be a tremendous recovery operation. And it's those relationships that you build with the state and Director Dragani and Tanya with Red Cross that helps you get through that, because it's just hard to prepare for something that's that devastating, because you just don't see it every day. And it's horrific.
When there's that much devastation, it's probably, and I was reminded of this, or it made me think of this back with Katrina in New Orleans. It's affecting the people who are out there that are supposed to be rescuing people and supposed to be helping people recover. They're affected by it, too. It's not as if you're all living apart from your community, right?
Absolutely. It affects the people who are affected by the actual event, the emergency responders, the people that support the emergency responders, people who are watching it on TV. I mean, it's a cataclysmic event, so it affects the nation when you have things like that. And it makes people have a sense of, are we prepared in my own little village or my own town or my own county? So it has it's a devastating effect across the country.
One of the things is the randomness of it. We don't know if that mile-wide swath, if it were ever to hit us, would be in the north side of Columbus, in the south side, or right down the middle. How does Red Cross prepare for something like that? A hospital was almost destroyed in Joplin.
Right. We work really closely with a lot of agencies, including EMA, and we really look at preparing the community, ensuring that we have enough volunteers that are trained and ready to support if we need to open shelters for people to come and stay, to make plans for feeding folks and taking care of and helping the first responders. I think that's one of the benefits of having volunteers able to go down to a place like Alabama is that they can bring that experience back, and it really helps us be better prepared as a community because, like Michael said, it's something that we have to constantly train for, be prepared for. We talk to our partners all the time. We just had an exercise on Monday to talk about what we need to do in case we need to plan on opening a shelter, and it's really a community event, and the community comes together to help the folks that have been affected.
So when something like that happens, and we've seen these disasters in recent weeks, do you all get on the horn with each other and start talking about, okay, maybe we better get together again and talk about this again?
Not only during an event like this, but it's constant. Because
anyway,
if you kind of look at it and break any incident or event into its cycles, you know, you have the warning part of it. And I'd really like to strongly recommend that all your listeners get a NOAA radio. If you have that in your house, you get exactly what the National Weather Service tells us at the same time. And it works on batteries and it works on electricity.
And solar. Some of them do.
Some are solar. And they have scripted messages. So if you have the hearing impaired or the deaf community, you can actually see and you can hook up lights to it so it'll go off. That little $30 device saves lives every day. And when I talk to my peers across the country, that device that you can get almost in any store. So that warning part of it. Of course, we have our warning systems here in Franklin County with our siren system. But then you go right into the response, and then you're going into the recovery mode. And the recovery mode for something like that could last for years. So we just don't talk about it when we see these large events on TV. Tanya and I and hundreds of partners throughout the county, we talk about this all the time because the training and exercises never quits, because you've constantly got to train and exercise to be prepared for an event like this.
When I was preparing, I saw the list of, I think that right now this is the number seventh year of the most fatalities from tornadoes at this point. It could still go up, but when you go back in time, you wonder how many of those fatalities in years gone by, particularly in the 20s and 30s, were because of the warning, because of the lack of warning. And that now, so you wonder about, relatively speaking, how much worse is it now? Because we have all those warnings and still hundreds die.
Well, it's very hard to predict where a tornado is going to go. And I was reading in a couple articles and some of the emails from the emergency management side of the house after the Joplin, and the sirens went off and gave people warning. But when you have something that devastating that is actually wiping out whole communities, you can get 20-minute warning. So what do you tell people to do? You know, go to seek the lowest part of the structure that you're in, or go into an inner room that's, you know, doesn't have windows. But when there are that EF4s and EF5s, it's you can warn them for 20 minutes if you're lucky, and still it's going to be devastating.
What about in Franklin County, Mike Pinnell? Where are the safe places to go if you're on the road? What should you be looking for if you're driving in your car and you're looking for shelter during a big storm?
Well, one thing is, do not go under an underpass. A lot of people think that if you go under a bridge during a tornado, that you're safe. You're not. And actually, because of the physics of it, it actually increases the velocity of it. So it's very dangerous. If you're in a car and you can see a tornado and you can go the opposite direction, it's almost like a flood. You know, don't drown, turn around. But if you're actually caught out in the open, go to the lowest. If you can get into a culvert and lay face down, you know, that's an extreme case to be caught in a car in a tornado. But stay in the car, get to a low place. If you can't do that, if you're on foot, get to a culvert or lie to the lowest place that you can find, flat on the ground, and cover your head with your hands. But most people are going to be in some sort of structure. And that leads to having a plan. I mean, there's got to be some personal responsibility to this. You can't think about what you're going to do with your wife or husband and kids for the first time at 2 o'clock in the morning when the sirens are going off and there are tornadoes coming through your neighborhood. This is something that you've got to plan. And the kids know, where do you all meet when there's no electricity and there's no lights? Where do we go to in the house if we don't have a basement? So you've got to work this, and you've got to have a family plan. There's some personal responsibility. You've got to be able to survive on your own for at least 3 to 4 days, because it may take 3 or 4 days before they can get to you because of the destruction. So there's a lot of personal responsibility about this, and I'm sure Director Dragani will talk about that.
Tanya Kraft, as far as the Red Cross is concerned, who calls who first? Is there a calling tree out there or something, you know, like they do with schools and
Sure there is. Sure there is. You know, we answer to disasters every day here in the Franklin County community. Most common disaster here in Columbus is a single-family house fire. And when that happens and a family is affected by a fire's destroyed their home, the first responders, usually the fire department, are going to call the Red Cross and say a family's been affected. And we're going to go out, meet with the family, and start talking to them about their recovery, where they're going to stay. Do they need essential items such as clothing and food? Do they need medication replacement? But that happens every day. We help about 500 families in Franklin County alone every year. When we're looking at a larger disaster, we're going to get called. EMA is going to come out. We're going to we'll send somebody directly to EMA to start putting together a plan for the community recovery, and finding out what buildings are okay, where we can open a shelter so people can congregate. I think one of the most important things, that, and we've seen it over the last several weeks, is getting in touch with individuals. Mike touched on one really important thing about having a plan. I think it's very important for people to think about, if something happened, where am I going to, how am I going to know my loved ones okay? If the infrastructure's down, cell towers are down, I mean, think about it. How am I going to know my loved one in another state? If you come up with a communications plan prior to a disaster, the one person you're going to designate outside of your immediate area, so that it's sort of a communications plan so that you can touch base and everybody knows everybody is safe as soon as you get to a telephone. Red Cross also has a Safe and Well website, and we do encourage individuals to go on. We've had over 1,000 people register on that site to let loved ones know. We've had 59,000 people searching for loved ones. So that's a big piece, is how, after the tornado goes through or the disaster happens, how are we going to let our family members know that we're okay? And so that's something I would like to promote as part of being prepared.
A family calling tree.
Absolutely.
Then. Steve from Southwest Missouri, you were 65 miles from Joplin.
Right, approximately. I lived in Columbus for 45 years, and we moved to Southwest Missouri about 4 years ago. And I would like to say that the television stations, when anything like this happens, immediately discontinue their network programming, and they're showing the weather maps, and they're telling exactly where everything is. They've got the sophisticated, you know, weather radar now that can see the hooks that indicate tornadoes. And they're constantly saying, if you live in such and such a town or such and such a county, you should get in your storm shelter now.
Are storm shelters more common out there than they are here?
I get the impression that they are. In our neighborhood, for example, there's about six. We're right outside of the city of Nixa, Missouri, and there's about six houses there. And there's one house that has a storm shelter that I know of. Also, because of the terrain being very hilly, most of the homes have basements or walkouts, which are, you know, a safer place to be. I will also say, I work for Missouri State University now, and we got an email from our president Monday asking for anyone with medical expertise or other expertise to contact a certain location and volunteer to help. I also talked to a Red Cross volunteer in Springfield, and she was saying that they were overwhelmed with people in Springfield wanting to volunteer through the Red Cross, and they really needed some volunteers in Springfield just to help filter the volunteers. So the communities have really pulled together.
Everybody you know okay?
Yes. The only people we knew that lived in Joplin, my wife plays tennis, and she was playing tennis with a team from Joplin about 2 hours before the tornado hit, and they sent her, and this is kind of a funny email, they decided to eat dinner in Springfield before they drove back to Joplin, and sent the email that losing 0-1 is kind of in perspective now.
A lot of things come into perspective, don't they?
Yes, they they do.
Steve, thanks so much for calling us.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. We're talking about what would we do if we were hit. If you have any questions or comments, coming up will be Nancy Dragani. She's the executive director of the Ohio Emergency Management Agency. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or like WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
71 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today. We could see some pop-up showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, and a high of 79. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight as well. Some of those storms could be severe, a low of 57. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms for Friday and a high of 69, a slight chance of rain Friday night. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. So what if we were hit? How would we respond if the disasters of Tuscaloosa and Joplin were visited on us? Joining us now is Nancy Dragani. She is executive director of the Ohio Emergency Management Agency. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Ann.
So what do you learn from the cases of Tuscaloosa and Joplin?
Well, I learned a couple things. One of the most one of the most important things I learned is how important preparedness is and planning and training and exercise. And Mike Pennell talked about that. That isn't something that happens just during or immediately after an event like this. To be effective, it has to happen all the time. And that's something that I'm reminded of daily when we look at events like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Oklahoma, Joplin, Missouri. The other thing that I'm reminded of is how fortunate we are in Ohio to have the system of emergency management that we have. Every county has an emergency management director. We have directors like Mike Pennell here in Franklin County that are focused every day on preparing their communities and their citizens for a disaster. And when we have a disaster, they're the people we reach out to right away.
Is that unusual for a state like Ohio to have that kind of blanket of security out there?
It is not unusual for a state like Ohio because we're really resource rich in Ohio. We're blessed with a very rich population. We're blessed with the geography that we have in Ohio. It is not the standard across the nation, though. There are some states, particularly the western states and the rural states, that don't have the resources that we have in terms of emergency management systems and directors.
614-292-8513, that's the number to call. If you'd like to speak with Nancy Dragani, she is executive director of the Ohio Emergency Management Agency. And Brad in Cleveland, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, my name's Brad, and I'm an amateur radio operator, and I'm a member of an organization called ARES, Amateur Radio Emergency Services. And we also do communications for people who are having,
In times of crisis?
Yes, in times of crisis that are need health and welfare checks. And we do that across the whole world even at times. But usually the ham radio operators are the first ones to get in and communicate what's happening within the area to the outside world, especially if the communication systems are down. Amateur radio also has the motto of, if all else fails, then amateur radio.
That's a great point.
And Mike?
They're in our office every day. The Central Ohio equivalent is COARES. They're a great resource. We exercise with them constantly. They do a lot of things for us. It's a great form of communication that will not fail in case lines come down. They go to the hospitals during an emergency in case the power's out. They're a great group of patriots. They volunteer, you know, like all volunteers, which is amazing to me, is what volunteers do. They come, give up their time, work, don't ask for anything except for maybe, hey, thanks a lot once in a while. So ham radio operators, they're in our office every day. We love them.
Nancy, let's talk about radio. We're going to have a radio jack on toward the end of the hour to talk about what they went through in Alabama and how they tried to keep the world afloat for a lot of people during that crisis down there. What is your impression of how radio, I mean, people thought radio would be dead 50 years ago, and I'm not tooting our own horn here, folks, but it does play a big role, and it played a huge role in Joplin as well.
Absolutely. You know, the reality is radio, particularly local radio, links people. It linked people 20, 30 years ago. It continues to link people. It's a place people can call and get information. You know, just as little as thinking about the last time we had a significant snow event in Ohio, and radio informed our citizens what was open, what was closed. Every day, I would say people rely on radio to tell them whether they should take 315 or whether they might want to take the outer belt. It doesn't change during an emergency, and in fact, I think it becomes even more important as an avenue for people to connect with each other, to share the impact, to talk about the impact, and to, again, make those connections of needs and issues and individuals.
And Mike, one of those solar-powered radios, that's another way. I mean, people need to have the radio. In Joplin, people lost their cars, too. They couldn't even go out and start the radio in their car.
People need, like we talked about earlier, have a radio, have batteries, be prepared. But, you know, another thing, and this is, I've been slow to come to this because I'm kind of an old guy here, but the social media. This Twitter, which, you know, last year I would say we're never going to do that because I don't really sure I get it.
You are old.
I know. It's tough, but. It's because I'm from Whitehall.
But you've changed but your
made
mind.
It.
You
but
changed your
I,
mind.
I want to give our Twitter account because we've gotten over 300 followers in a week. And just sitting out like last night, we were in the office all night last night because the National Weather kept saying the tornado watch and kept extending it. And we would send out these little beams of information and people could follow it, not just individuals, but agencies and news things. So can I give my Twitter address
Absolutely.
Or our Twitter address out? It's www.twitter.com/FCEMHS. Please join us because getting that information out, a lot of people use it today. And, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning last night, we said, hey, the watch has been extended till 5 a.m. 30 to 40 people responded back and said, thank you very much for telling us.
So they're out there listening.
Yes.
You can go to Ann Fisher, WOSU, and I'll be following them by the end of the day if you want to do it that way. And we'll also post that link online at WOSU.org/allsides. And Nancy, are you on Twitter now?
We are. It's interesting, Mike, that you brought that up because that's something that we're taking a look at and working with the governor's office on. Many other states have, at the state level, begun Twitter accounts. Obviously, our look is statewide, so it looks a little bit different in terms of the type of information. But, you know, my daughter, my 21-year-old, quite frankly, is is using those kinds of medium to get information as opposed to what I rely on, which continues to be radio, television, and newspapers. So we have to recognize that and adapt.
Terry from Columbus called in, wanted you to address the false sirens that have been going off in Franklin County recently. And while you're at that, Mike, could you talk just about the sirens in general? And do people pay enough attention to those anymore?
Oh, yes. People pay a lot of attention, not just the normal individuals, but all our elected officials. Our siren program is one of the largest in the country for a metropolitan area. And it started in the 50s. Franklin County was one of the first counties that installed a siren system because in those days, the Cold War and people worried about nuclear attack. But it's come over the decades to become something that people count on. And it's a great outdoor warning system. It's not made for if you're in your basement watching a movie with the speakers up and counting on it. It's made for outdoor warning systems, but people have come to rely on it. So in Franklin County, we have 172, and we'll be probably over 200 sirens here in about a year. And the last 2 days, we've had 1 to 2 sirens that have put out a signal that is a Cold War signal that we never use.
Rogue sirens.
Well, they're not rogue sirens. Somehow they put out a signal that we used in the 1950s to warn people of nuclear attack. So we don't even use it. So yesterday when it happened, it was an anomaly. And, of course, we have the manufacturer, our reps, our experts. We call them the siren team. And we looked at the four possibilities what it was. And we came to the conclusion because it's just basic 1940 technology. We send a radio signal out. It goes to a repeater, sometimes off nationwide, and there's 3 repeaters in the county, and it goes to 172 radio systems throughout the county. We think that a stray frequency radio signal may have interrupted it. But when it happened this morning, we ruled out that it was a mechanical because we took apart every siren that may have been affected by that yesterday. So we ruled out the mechanical. It still could be stray radio frequencies that may be affecting it. It also could be, and we've had this happen in the past in other counties and in other states because I've called some of my peers, that people who like to monitor frequencies and get into that kind of thing and like to listen to other people's baby radios on their cribs have kind of maybe hacked into the system and have figured out this particular code. So we're investigating it. We think we've got a solution today to fix those 3 possible sirens. I know it really bothers people in Upper Arlington because it's one yesterday was 3:30 in the morning, and it's an odd sound.
Creepy sounding, huh?
But and people want to make sure that when they hear that siren go off, but I will tell you, if you hear that creepy sound that you just said, it doesn't mean anything, and we're working on it. Okay. The important thing is to, if you hear that wail that's associated with the 12 o'clock test that we do every Wednesday or when we turn on for a tornado warning, that's the one that's important. But we take it very seriously, and we're working on it, and I think we've got a fix, and we'll keep fighting the battle.
Brian, in Upper Arlington, you want to talk about community emergency response teams. Welcome to the show.
Man. Yeah, I wanted to give a plug there for a team called CERT. There's one in every county here in Ohio. I'm a member of it. I'm also I'm attached to a search and rescue group, which doubles us to 13 for Delaware County. But yeah, CERT, like you said, stands for Community Emergency Response Team. And basically, they're the new version of what used to be called civil defense. And it gives citizens of the county that they live in, the community they live in, an opportunity to learn how to do basic urban search and rescue, light search and rescue, as well as CPR, first aid training. And it helps you come to understanding what you can do to prepare so that you can help others, if a disaster were to strike. Chris Williams in Franklin County is the CERT director. So I encourage folks through the Franklin County EMA and Department of Homeland Security to get in contact. You can go to just Google CERT. I'm not exactly sure what the government website is. I know you can also link to it through ready.gov. which is the FEMA website. Mike was just talking about the weather or the tornado sirens.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put a plug in for folks to get a weather radio and make sure it works properly. A lot of folks complain that they can't hear the tornado sirens from in the house, and Mike just talked about that. They're not meant for when you're sitting in the house watching a movie, but a weather radio is just as essential in a home here in in Ohio as a smoke detector would be. And so I wanted to also kind of plug that as well, and I'll take any comments that you and your guests have off the air.
Thank you very much, Brian, for your work and your volunteerism, and thanks for calling.
These CERT teams are great. And when the new team came into the Franklin County EMA and Homeland Security, one of the first things we did was hire a CERT coordinator. And it's a neighborhood-based approach. CERT teams are neighborhood-based. They can help their neighbors, their immediate people on their block. And they can do missions and help us out with damage assessment. But we have a full-time CERT coordinator at the office. And those people, like I talked about earlier about volunteers, they're trained, they're dedicated, you can rely on them, and they show up. So I agree with your caller. They're great. We use them. They're a great asset for our organization. And Chris Williams is our CERT coordinator. So call 794-0213 if you want to join CERT for Franklin County. We take all comers.
Nancy Dragani, just volunteers in general, how much do they play a role in recovery? And also, what happens when there's a crisis one place, we send our volunteers there, and something hits us at home?
And in fact, that has happened. We mentioned 2008 and the windstorm before we got started.
You know, I think Hurricane Ike.
The Hurricane Ike, mm-hmm. and what we would call the windstorm here in Ohio. You know, the reality is all of us rely on volunteers, whether they're here or whether they're in Texas. And we've, over the years, built a national system of volunteers through emergency management assistance compacts, through the American Red Cross, through the CERT teams. It's important that we continue that effort, but there's also a recognition that we need to husband our resources here in Ohio in Franklin County and make sure that we have the resources we need to respond to our own events. I think we do that very well. In 2008, there were volunteers that had gone to Texas. There was no problem when we had the challenges here with the windstorm with us reaching out and bringing those volunteers back. There's a clear recognition that it's a give-and-take relationship.
Julie, you're on the west side. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My question regards the family plan. My mother has just recently living with us, and she's 94. She has dementia. Last month when the siren went off at 2 o'clock in the morning, we weren't sure if we should take her to the basement with the rest of the family or if we should leave her in on the first floor, maybe take her to the bathroom. But my worry was we would be separated as a family. And I always thought we should stay together. So I was just hoping you could give some direction in that regard.
Tanya, do you have some suggestions, Tanya Kraft?
Sure. Yeah. I think that you should definitely get her in a safe place, and she should be with the family.
Take her to the basement
with
the
family.
I think so, too. If you can move her to the basement with the family, that would be my recommendation. You don't want to be separated, but the basement is the safest place in a structure. So please, take her to the basement.
Thank you, Julie, for that call. From Bev on Facebook says, one of the comments I heard over and over last night on CNN was that there was no central place for families to search for the missing. Some people were told that they wouldn't be able to check the morgue for 2 weeks. I seriously doubt that we could do any better in Central Ohio. Could we? Michael, Pinnell,
well,
Tanya?
Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We work together through agencies. Red Cross, one of their roles in a disaster is to reunite families. And absolutely, we'll be working with all of our partner agencies, including the hospitals, our first responders, to work on having it would be through the media, letting families know where to contact, because we would be working with the hospitals to reunite those families with the loved ones. That's a priority for us.
And can I say something?
Sure.
And Director Dragani talked about this earlier. The system that we have in Ohio, which starts at the jurisdictional level, and then it goes to the county level, and then it goes to the state. The Emergency Operations Center at the counties, these, when they're activated, and they're a scalable resource, so it depends on the size of the incident. But if we have an incident that affects several jurisdictions in the county, or we get requests, we start bringing in those subject matter experts and those emergency partners, and that Emergency Operations Center is organized so that it can handle, get the information. And the big thing that we're trying to do in the Emergency Operations Center is establish that common operational picture. So inside our center, we know what the fire chiefs and the police chiefs and the mayors are seeing. So not only we can help them with their request for resources, but we can anticipate and do future planning for them. But we can also tell Director Dragani's agency what's going on in Franklin County so they have an idea, because if we can't handle it at Franklin County, we go to the state. That's our next step. So this system that we have in place, and some people call it the National Incident Management System, those are things that we practice every day. And the art of running an emergency operations center is the key. to being able to respond and help people in the response, during the response, and the recovery. And it's that connection between us with our partners like Tanya and then dealing with the state with Director Dragani that makes the system work.
Director Dragani?
Just very quickly, I guess I'm going to answer the question a little bit more directly. We know that mass casualties are an issue in planning, and we're working very, very hard at the state level with our local partners, with the American Red Cross, to address that specific kind of issue. When you have a mass casualty situation, a mass fatality situation, and you have people who are desperate to know the outcome of their family members, that's not just a response issue. It's a planning issue, and it's something that we're working very hard at the state level and working with our local partners on so that if something like this would happen in Ohio, we do have the connections and the plans in place to be able to tell people as quickly as possible what the status of their loved ones are.
I want to thank you for joining us today, Nancy Dragani. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Nancy Dragani. She's director of Ohio's Emergency Management Agency. Also with us today, Mike Pinnell. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for asking me. Anytime. I love your show.
Thank you. Mike is director of the Franklin County Emergency Management and Homeland Security. And Tanya Kraft. Thank you, Tanya, for joining us today as well.
Welcome.
Tanya is director of Emergency Services for the Red Cross of Greater Columbus. When we return, we'll hear from an engineer, an expert in structural engineering and how buildings are constructed to withstand the sorts of winds we're talking about or not. And also we'll hear from a Jack from Alabama who was on the air when the tornado hit and how he did his job at that time. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The next fresh air, the new science of dog behavior. Some trainers say, don't let your dog win at tug of war, you'll appear submissive. Not true, says John Bradshaw.
If you do let a dog win over and over again at tug of war, it likes you. It wants to play with you more than it did to begin with because it's having fun.
Bradshaw's new book is Dog Sense. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon, right here on 89.7 NPR News. For more than two decades, PBS has been proud to honor the service and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform, their families at home, and all those who have given their lives for our country, with the National Memorial Day Concert. Sunday night on WOSU-TV, watch an evening that has become an American tradition. Live from the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol, this year's concert will include a tribute to our World War II veterans and a commemoration of the 10th anniversary of 9/11. Watch the National Memorial Day Concert Sunday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. And it's 71 degrees in downtown Columbus. We do have a chance of some showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, a high of 79. Also some pop-up thunderstorms and rain showers tonight, a low of 57 degrees. There's a slight chance of rain for Friday and a high of 69. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. So what if we were hit? How would we respond? To some extent, the question should be, how can we prepare? Joining us now to talk about the Midwest and how it's structured to withstand the winds of tornadoes and how it's outfitted to manage other high wind storms is Dr. Timothy Reinhold. Tim is Senior Vice President for Research and Chief Engineer for the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you, Ann.
Your research includes post-event assessments. So what do you learn from other catastrophes like, I guess, Alabama at this point?
Well, I think one of the issues is that, unfortunately, when you have a major tornado like an EF4 or 5 go through and everything's in splinters, it's hard to learn a lot about the structural connections at that point, how things were built, because there's just so much debris and you really can't track the path back to what actually happened. We learn probably more when we look at what happens in the periphery of the storms and then when we're looking at hurricanes, where we can define the winds a lot better than we can in tornadoes.
Is there any protection against a tornado when it comes to structural issues?
Well, certainly not all tornadoes are the same strength. And so that there are things that can be done and be effective in the weaker tornadoes, say the EF 0, 1, 2, and possibly beginning to go into the 3, where if you tie the structure together well, and that's really concentrating on the connections between the roof and the walls and the foundations. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of the strength that we already pay for in the wood members that are in the walls and the structure are not really used to their fullest when an event like this happens because the connections between them are so weak.
When I was preparing, I saw that really the to upgrade homes in the first place when they're built wouldn't be that much greater of an expense.
Correct. It's about 2% to in terms of the cost of the materials and the fasteners to improve the connections quite a bit. So it's not a terribly high expense to, if you do it when you're building. Part of the issue for the builders is that they then typically have to get the building engineered because a lot of times we're not building little cookie-cutter houses. And so the costs go up when you have to have engineering coming in and telling you how to make these connections and where to put the metal to make this houses stronger.
Mark, you're in the south side of Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. For your guest, it's a question. He's right in the line of what I'd been thinking when I called in. In terms of not only tornadoes but other disasters, it's difficult to retro-engineer existing buildings. It's somewhat better to deal with new construction. And I know that a year or so ago, a building association in Ohio had opposed some of the national upgrades in the building standards that might relate to these and some other issues. And I guess my question would be, it makes sense to me for Ohio in particular that at least for new construction that it include be resistant to tornadoes, and there's a cabling system that locks into your basement slab that can do that to an extent, as well as some of the measures that he just indicated, flood resistance and also earthquake resistance, because it's rare but we are liable to severe earthquake damage in Ohio. And having been in Tuscaloosa, I know particularly as you go further south, then there's the question of engineer manufactured homes, which are mobile homes, trailer homes, and things like that, and wondered if he could deal with those issues of the earth, water, sky, those kind of issues.
Acts of God. Tim Reinhold, thank you very much, Mark.
Right. A lot on the menu there. Certainly, so, it's an issue in terms of trying to get communities to adopt the latest building codes and to try to stay with them. There's an awful lot of emphasis on reducing things to kind of keep the status quo because it increases and changes cost. The issue to some extent when you look at the modern building codes and what would be required in Ohio is even if you adopted that latest building code, when it comes to a tornado, it's not going to do much because the design wind speeds are typically about 90 miles an hour. And the building code for residences anyway allows you to use what we call prescriptive requirements. And so you're really allowed to build pretty much like you've been building. It's when you get to a higher design level, say 110 mile an hour winds, that a lot of the engineering begins to kick in. And so just going to the latest international code really wouldn't give you much additional margin for tornadoes.
We have an email from a listener. They write, I live in an old building built in 1850 in German Village. Is there any safe place in such a building? It seems to me this building would be ripped to shreds.
Sometimes the quality of construction in the older buildings is actually a little bit better than some of the new ones where we've gone to a lot of panels and not very well connected. The issue really is when you're trying to find a safe place to get as many walls between you and the outside as possible because of the flying debris that typically goes around in these events. And also it allows layers or parts of the building to be peeled away, and you still have this core area, hopefully, that stays in place. It's one of the reasons why the typical recommendation is go to a windowless room in the middle, hopefully a bathroom or something, where you may have a smaller space and it may be tied together a little bit better.
When people are house shopping, do you have any recommendations for what they should look for, some of the questions they should ask?
The construction at least in Ohio is going to be fairly similar throughout. Certainly if you go with some of the concrete type structures, then they're going to be much more resilient to these kind of extreme events. You can get there with wood structures and others by tying them together properly, but it's just not a common thing. So you're rarely, if ever, going to find those connections already in existence in a home. Now, one thing that people can do, particularly for the life safety issue, is to have a storm shelter in the home, and there are some pretty good guides out there for how to do those. But again, the issue is, you know, can you find a home that's got one, and what standard was it built to?
Haley in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Haley.
I was calling.
Oops. Somehow you are disconnected, Haley. I'm very sorry for that. I want to say thanks to our guest, Dr. Tim Reinhold. He is Senior Vice President for Research, and he's Chief Engineer.
I think while we're waiting, a point I might make is that most of the deaths actually occur in the EF4 and EF5 tornadoes, where you're really dealing with the 2 or 3% of tornadoes that are extremely intense. And at those levels, even design for, say, 110-mile-an-hour winds is not going to buy you a lot. So that's where the shelter really becomes the most effective way for life safety.
Well, Haley, we're not going to have time for her to call back, but she did want to ask about higher standards for buildings like school buildings and hospitals and that sort of thing. Is that typical?
The building codes already include a bump up for critical and essential facilities, where we look at a higher probability event. In the coastal areas, that really comes into play because of the hurricane probabilities are much higher. With tornadoes, unfortunately, the probability of any particular building being struck in a given year in the United States is less than 1 in 5,000 per year. And so when we're designing for earthquakes or we're designing for hurricanes and other events, we're typically only going out to about a 1 chance in 2,000 of having that event occur in any given year. So the tornadoes are still kind of out beyond that horizon. And the only people that really design for those are nuclear power plants and some data centers, where making sure that data system and your bank backup for your banks and so forth is that they're willing to spend the money to get to that level.
Tim Reinhold, Senior Vice President for Research and Chief Engineer for the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Joining us now is Scott Fitzgerald. He's the morning host at WERC Radio in Birmingham, Alabama. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Well, thank you very much.
On April 27th, a series of massive tornadoes blasted through Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia. There was amazing devastation in neighborhoods across Birmingham, the state's most populous city. A million people in Alabama altogether were without power in the aftermath of the storm. And you were on the air, right, Scott?
Yeah, well, I was on the next morning. You know, as a result of everything being done. And what we did was we took all the radio stations that we have within our group, simulcasted what we were doing on the news talk station here, because so many people were without power. The only real connection they had to any sort of information was radio. And so we just reached out to everybody that we possibly could with all of our formats.
We were listening to some cuts from Joplin at the start of the show, just a montage I think NPR put together, and it was very emotional just listening to those. And I was wondering what it was like to be on the air like that, because you know how personal the medium is.
Well, when you get phone calls from people who have lost everything and have nothing, and they're just thankful that you connected them with somebody who had a skid load of bottled water that they wanted to help out. You know, just the human connections were so amazing and so fantastic through the whole ordeal that you just kind of tried to focus on that as opposed to the devastation that was all around. It was, what can I do next? How can I help? Who needs it? And how can we connect you together, you know?
How natural did it feel for people to start calling into the radio station?
It seemed very natural and very immediate. People either wanted to help, and the offers for that were just, you know, incredible and ongoing and still going on. Mm-hmm. And then also people were not shy about saying, this is what I need. Here, you know, I don't have this. You know, my kids lost all their clothes. Can you help me out? It was almost like radio became that social network again. You know, that it is, you know, held that place for so many years, mm-hmm. and it took it back during the in light of this tragedy.
There was in that montage I mentioned a call from a woman who had found a dog and it had a tag, and she called out the name of the person that the dog belonged to. Was there many calls like that regarding pets and things like that?
We had a lot of them, actually, and we did quite a bit of work with all the different agencies. And some of the agencies themselves were destroyed, you know, and they're in their different locations. So, yeah, we had a lot of incredible pet stories, you know, dogs that have been missing, you know, since the tornado. Actually, we just had one today where one turned up, finally wandered back into the neighborhood after being gone for a month. So, yeah, there's a continuous source of stories of grace. It just really been wonderful, and it's the silver lining, I guess, to the cloud that seemed to have been hovering over us.
Scott, what's your usual show like? What do you usually do?
We usually talk about the issues. You know, it's not, you know, all politics. It's, you know, the big stories of the day. So whether it's Arnold Schwarzenegger or John Edwards, or we got a mayor here in town that has decided that he doesn't want to take FEMA trailers for people who've lost their homes. You know, those kinds of issues. Everything. Whatever sort of, you know, grievances that people had with anything, that was all put on the back burner for the time that we were doing all the storm coverage.
And are you 24/7? I mean, not you, but the station, or
yeah, oh yeah, yeah, we're on all day.
So you have somebody on all the time, and when it was happening, the folks that were on the air then, did they share any kind of stories with you about that experience?
So, you know what it's like when you come into a radio station and your shift starts and, you know, the people
yeah,
that
know.
Are leaving, you know, there's that handoff doesn't necessarily lend itself to a whole lot of back and forth. But yeah, I mean, the collective consciousness of the people that are working here, and we're working through all this. We've got a huge library now of things that we can share as far as stories go. Somebody says, well, did you hear about this? And and then we can add another bit to that, because it was very 9/11 feeling here. You know how we were all in the same boat after 9/11 and sort of shocked? Yeah. It was very much that same feeling afterwards.
Well, Scott Fitzgerald, he's the morning host at WERC Radio in Birmingham, Alabama. Thanks for joining us today, Scott.
It's my pleasure.
Appreciate it. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.